Let's open up the Love Lab today with our special guest, Sun Times columnist, Dr. Laura Berman. Dr. Berman, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Hi there.
Hi.
We are very interested in a couple of things today. First, before we get into this national survey of sexual attitudes and lifestyles, I want to talk about something that was in the Sun Times last week. This was about a leading sex researcher in Britain who made headlines, and people took issue with this regarding forcing kids to kiss you. So talk about this. Why would this be problematic?
Well, I thought it was interesting because it brings to our attention as parents something that certainly in our generation when we were kids was not even a second thought. If your Aunt Sally, who hadn't seen you in a year, you know, wanted a hug and a kiss, you were going to get in trouble with your parents if you did not comply, you know?
I know.
Right? I remember that, don't you?
Yes, and I remember just like freezing and recoiling sometimes when an adult that I did not want kissing me would do that. I guess that.
Right, and it wasn't like there was any, there could be a million and one reasons why in that moment, sometimes it had to be do with the person we were about to kiss, that we didn't like them, or they were big and smelly, or they were too intense, and sometimes it had to do with our state of mind, right, that we just woken up from a nap, or we were fussy, or we were mad at our parents, or we didn't really want to be there. Whatever the reason, we were sort of, it was just expected. I at least knew. I mean, I wasn't going to be locked in a closet for 3 weeks with no food and water if I didn't kiss them. But, you know, I was going to get in trouble. It was expected. And so I think what this researcher was bringing up was, you know, who's to say what's right, what's wrong? About because we spend so much time, especially with our daughters, trying to teach them that their body is their own and they shouldn't, you know, let anyone touch them in a way they don't want to be touched, and they're, you know, they should really get a sense of agency and control and empowerment around their own physical space and owning that. And then we force them to kiss, you know, grandma when she comes to visit when they really just maybe aren't even in the mood to. And is it okay to force them?
And so what do we do? Because it's not even, I mean, it's just a matter of it comes across as rude. But is it really the adult who's being rude by forcing this upon the child?
Yeah, I don't.
Oops, is her line cutting out there? Want to call her back, get her on a better line there. I'm confused now about this because I want
to
know, all right, you bring the kids over to grandma's house and then before you leave, kiss grandma goodbye, and invariably somebody doesn't want to do that, right? And you say, oh, come on. And then you pretty much push them on grandma and then grandma's happy, but maybe the kid's not happy.
Yeah.
And maybe we're doing something that's going to be a problem down the road. Is this like too much thinking?
I don't know. I want to hear what she says.
We're going to get Laura Berman back on the line.
I think the point is that you are telling them that it is okay for physical contact to be coerced or even forced upon you. And what she writes in her column is that not only can this increase the child's risk of victimization, it could inadvertently increase their likelihood of being of victimizing, because then they might think it's okay to play rough with their friends or to bestow kisses and unwanted touching on playmates even after they say no.
Yeah,
and that's a really good point.
Yeah, but And we've got Dr. Berman back. I don't think there's any doubt or controversy that, you know, about setting boundaries for our kids. But
yeah. But
really, there's a part of me that thinks, oh, come on, just kiss grandma and making your child do that now we're told is harmful.
I know. I sort of agree with you. I get it. Like, how far do we push this? I get the, you know, I there's a part of me that feels the way you do, Bob. But then the other part of me that spends so much time working with adult women who, as children, were, you know, I'll give you an example. In our generation, certainly, if you ask adult women, 80% of first sexual experiences, while not forced,
were not exactly wanted. Mm. You know, I just really didn't know how to say no. You know, I didn't want to upset him. He, you know, it was, I felt like if I didn't, then X, Y, or Z would happen. And I think there's sort of, the effort is really, for today's parents, is really about, with boys and girls, but especially with girls who tend to be a little bit more submissive, you know, historically in this regard, is to teach them you never have to do anything with your body that you don't want to do. Nobody should be touching you in a way you don't want to be touched, from tickling you to kissing you to whatever. And so it's a tricky thing. I think what I try to do with my kids, and they're all boys, but I try to teach them the same thing about consent in general, is that when they don't want to kiss or hug someone, I'll say, well, why don't you give them a high five? Or like, what can you do to greet grandpa in a way that's going to make him feel how much you love him without having to like, you know, give him a kiss when you don't feel like it right now. And I sort of model it for my father, who's going to be ready to get annoyed that the kid's not kissing him, you know, and I'm sort of, you know, and then my father rolls his eyes at me and I take the heat for the kiss.
Right. You know, but that's okay.
And that's okay. Yeah, yeah. I don't mind.
You know, when I first read about this, I was feeling like Bob was like, oh, come on, give me a break. Like, we can't make our kids do the polite thing, because you are teaching them a lesson that sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, you sometimes if somebody says hello to you and you're in a bad mood, even if you're in a bad mood, you don't just say something nasty to them just because
right.
you're in a bad mood. You do the right thing because you are kind to other people. But I really see your point. I really agree with your point, too. And if there is a better way, high-fiving or anything else, then why not?
Yeah, and Laura Berman writes in her column, encouraging the kids to always ask playmates before engaging in physical contact. For example, you'd ask if somebody wants a hug, and then instead of a kiss, maybe if you're having problems with grandma or grandpa, a fist bump. I guess that makes sense. I guess that's the safe way. I'm just we overthink a lot of this stuff, I guess, and.
I know it gets tricky, and how far is too far overthinking it. But
yeah.
if you know, I think in general, teaching our kids to be polite and compassionate, and not to let their own bad mood or bad day spill on to the world around them, can be done without requiring that they do things with their bodies that they don't feel in alignment for them.
Right.
You know, when it comes to other people, I think you still give that lesson without forcing them to kiss their grandparents or aunt or uncle, whoever, when they don't want to.
Right. We're going to take a quick break, and then Dr. Laura Berman will hang on here in the Love Lab to talk about this National Survey of Sexual Attitudes and Lifestyles, which is kind of interesting. And before we do that, Dr. Berman, let me ask you a question about this. The story we were just talking about, forcing kids to give a kiss,
mm-hmm.
That all came from a sex researcher in Britain. This survey we're going to talk about was done over in Britain as well. Are they more infatuated with this sort of topic? Is there more of that going on over there than here? Why do we have all these surveys from England on all these topics?
It feels relatively recent. I have noticed the same thing, and that has not historically been the case. But I think I have to pay a visit over to England and see what's going on
I think
there.
They're making up for lost time over
yeah,
there.
They had like all those years of repression.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. All right, hang on for a couple minutes, and then we'll talk about what's going on in people's private lives. Continuing in the Love Lab here with Dr. Laura Berman, columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times. The National Survey of Sexual Attitudes and Lifestyles prodded into the private lives of 15,000 British adults recently and found that about 20% of individuals ages 25 to 44 haven't had sex in the last month. Of the 25 to 34-year-olds, almost 20% of men and 20% of women haven't in 4 weeks. For ages 45 to 54, that increases to 21% for men, 27% for women. They found that on average, women were 8% more likely to report dry spells than men. What I want to know here, Dr. Berman, is in your experience, how honest are people in these surveys?
Well, I mean, part of it depends on the methods used, right? So a lot of people are often much more honest on anonymous surveys than they are if they have someone call them on the phone or interview them in person. And it also depends on what the sample was. You know, if you're going to have people volunteer to take an anonymous survey, they're probably going to be more honest than if they are recruited, you know, so to speak. So it depends. But in general, if people are going to lie about things, it's going to be, to make them in their minds look better.
Right. But even if these were perfect specimens in every way, we still don't know if these if these numbers are affected by the fact that people are in relationships or not, because it might be harder to have sex if you're not in a relationship.
Right. But I'll tell you that in general, I think people tend to act like they're having and talk like they're having more sex than they are. Although, you know, with their girlfriends or with their guy friends, they might, you know, complain along the lines of telling the truth. But in general, we tend to fudge a little bit to increase the amount of sex that we're having in our lives and the quality of it. And that, you know, that's something that I tell every person who walks into my office who imagines that they're alone or that they're the only one having problems in this area, is that it's because we all kind of put up this facade that everything's fantastic when in a large proportion we all go through dry spells and we all have difficulties. And people think that younger people don't have problems in the bedroom, and I've noticed an actual increase almost in some ways in the number of problems, mostly because so many young couples are, you know, sitting on their couch, each on their own computers, you know, doing their own networking, chatting, you know, whatever, Skyping, and not even watching the same TV show anymore. You know, they're even more sucked into separate technology than maybe they might have been in couples 10 years ago. So there are different kinds of challenges that keep people out of the bedroom now, I think, even younger ones.
Let me ask you something, Dr. Berman, and also I have a statement, but I'd like my voice to be electronically altered, and I want my identity concealed. I want to be on my face covered as you.
Like a shadow.
Yes, that's right. Okay, first of all, in your experience seeing people with various problems, all ages, is a common question you get from people, Doctor, what's normal as far as intimate relations? What's normal in a marriage?
I know what Bob is doing.
What's normal? Yeah. What's normal in a relationship that's not a marriage?
This is Bob's way of asking.
That's why I'm disguised right now.
Right. Every time I give a talk, that question always comes up, and it's because you want to be able to turn to Marianne and say, see, we should be having more.
Yeah.
She can turn to you and say, see, we don't have to have that much.
Now we're getting
that's
somewhere.
That's the reason that people ask. But, you know, there's no magic number. However, I will tell you my personal opinion, that if you want a really deep connection with each other, that you have to make your sex life a priority. And barring like major health crisis, life crisis, whatever, you should be having sex at least once a week.
See, now this is what I love about Dr. Berman. You get some of these experts, they don't tell you anything. They're just constantly generalizing.
It's my opinion. This is my clinical opinion. I've been doing this for over 20 years working with couples.
Yeah, you're an expert.
And I know what sort of works and what doesn't. And as a bare minimum, on average, even if it's, you know, and it doesn't have to be a 3-hour extravaganza. It can be maintenance, quick, you know, done, like whatever.
Bob is like dying right now.
I'm sorry, what'd you say there, Dr. Berman? I didn't hear the last thing.
Is it something or turning purple, blushing?
Turning purple, which is why you should be in the room with us.
Don't interrupt the doctor, Mary.
I walk in the room and he turns purple.
Yes, he does.
I don't know. He'd be more behaved if I was
him. Here is the deal. This is what's wrong with everybody. We don't know about other people's problems, and these kinds of issues issues are not talked about. So we look at other people and always think that's the perfect family. That's the perfect
right.
relationship. That's the perfect marriage. When in reality, we should all be in Dr. Berman's office.
And that's right.
And
sounds like you don't need to
included.
Be
but I mean seriously though I mean you know, we talk a lot about young women seeing these images in magazines that aren't real and they have issues with their body, but really we can't be. But if we were all open with each other, we'd all feel better, wouldn't we?
Yeah, and the same is true. There's all these media images of what sex is supposed to look like and what romance is supposed to look like. I think I've told you before how much I hate that Jerry Maguire line that you hear, "You complete me." I mean, these images of what romance should be and what a relationship should be and what sex should look like in a relationship and what we let each other believe because of that, of what's happening, sort of does set an unrealistic standard. And the only reason I care about that is because then people don't get the help they need, or they think they're in a lot more trouble than they are in their relationship, and they throw in the towel in the relationship sooner than they really need to. And there's all this shame and embarrassment around having a little struggle in that department, and in the department of your intimate life, and then you think you're some sort of freakazoid because of that when you're not. When your neighbor on either side of you is having similar problems or did last year.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Berman, please... some words of wisdom for one of our listeners who just sent us this text. I'm a 48-year-old married man of 24 years, and I'm lucky if my wife and I have sex every 6 months.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm glad you got that
Aww.
In, Mary.
Oh.
that's not you,
know,
Bob.
I know.
What is your problem?
That's what we would call a sexless marriage, definitely. It's not enough sex for the maintenance of the relationship. And here's what happens is that she's less interested in sex, then he becomes less romantic, connected, thoughtful, tuned in, emotionally available to her, and she feels less emotionally close to him, emotionally intimate, and then she's that much less inspired to be sexual with him, and then the sort of negative circle kicks in. So what I would say, and it's a really common scenario, it happens more where the woman loses interest than the man, but both can be true. And then you just really have to make clear how much of an issue it is, because I think a lot of times the person with the lack of interest just thinks, what's the big deal? I'm just not in the mood. And they don't understand the cost that it's having on the relationship. And so really making clear to her how it's affecting you emotionally and your connection to her and your sense of romance. And sometimes, telling her, let her read my book or help, because a lot of times women don't really buy this, don't really understand that if they want more romance and more connection, it comes for men through the vehicle of sex. And so she may have low libido for any number of reasons that have nothing to do with him, but she's not going to figure that out. She has to go to a doctor and get her hormone levels checked. She may have to go to a therapist and see what's happening in the emotional body image relationship department. It's sort of a picture puzzle when there's low libido, but she's not going to be motivated to figure that out unless she really understands how it's affecting him and the relationship. And so I think that's the first step. And then you can start putting the pieces of the puzzle as to why and addressing those.
All I know is on the way home, I'm picking up a new calendar for the house tonight.
You're going to have your little mark.
Yeah.
You got to schedule it.
Dr. Laura Berman, you're the best, and we'll be watching for you in the Sun-Times. And you have a website people can go to,
yeah,
right?
DrLauraBerman.com is the easiest way to find me.
Okay, I'm going to get out of my disguise, and we'll take the electronic signal off of my voice so it can be recognized again. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Dr. Berman.
Take care.